Welcome to The Painted Garden with Kimberly Trowbridge. This is a podcast about color theory and the creative life. Welcome back, sentient beings. I have a lot going on here at Top Hat Studio that I'm looking forward to sharing with you. To kick off this episode, I want to start with addressing some listeners' questions about my introductory track, The Bird Sounds and the Soft Piano. The atmospheric sounds of nature come directly from a field recording that I did about a year ago, last May, at Bloedel Reserve on Bainbridge Island. Bloedel Reserve is a 150-acre garden that weaves through an old-growth forest, and I have the incredible honor of being their current creative fellow. And so for the past 2 years, I've been able to go to the gardens, live there on-site, plein air paint, walk, dream, wander around. One of the spaces in the garden is a beautiful, long, geometric rectangle, a reflecting pond. It is unlike any other kind of neighborhood within the reserve. As you approach it, it's like you walk into an exterior room. So much geometry. The reflecting pond is surrounded by a kind of neon yellow-green grass that then leads up to a beautifully trimmed yew hedge that is trimmed to be very even and box-like, and the yew hedge is evergreen. And then as you move your eyes up, the next pass of space, hanging almost like heavy velvet emerald curtains, are the regal cedar trees that surround this long rectangular room. The field recording from the intro of The Painted Garden here is a recording from that reflecting pond space. So I'm inside that kind of green theater, taking a sample of sound. And near the reflecting pond is the Zen Garden, a beautifully taken care of Japanese garden by Bob, the caretaker at Bloedel. And part of that garden includes a small kind of trickling stream through the mustardy moss. And that stream moves into this bamboo instrument. And when it gets filled by the water, it flips quickly over and creates this wonderful kind of whacking sound that is kind of like a gong bell or a call to consciousness. And so in the field recording that you hear at the beginning, you can hear also that little bamboo click that happens that's part of that recording. And the piano track that is part of the introductory sound is also from that time a year ago at Bloedel, where I took that field recording inside the residence, and with the keyboard that was there on site, I just kind of played around to see if I could kind of expand or stretch the space within that recording. And so almost thinking of the piano keys as just steps through the landscape of the sound. And only recently, when I went back and heard that track, I was interested, or I really liked the sound of the dominant key, the dominant notes that I was playing. But being a novice musician, I wasn't able to figure out what those notes were, and I needed to take a new clean track of it to be able to use an overlay on the atmospheric field recording. And so I sent a little sound clip of that original piano recording to my brother and asked him to transcribe it into the notes so that I could then revisit and replay that. And he was able to easily do that for me, identifying the main notes as B and F sharp, and then playing or kind of trickling between those two. Those of you that have read my most recent blog post, published this past Sunday, entitled Louise Glick's Telescope, know that I've been thinking a lot about relativity and perspective. In particular, with Louise Glick's poem entitled Telescope, which I'm going to read for you now. To get you inside of this poem, I want you to imagine yourself standing on the top of a hill at night. It's cold, it's a clear night though, and you are looking through a telescope, and you're kind of getting lost in that changed perspective of things far away being really near to you. And so for the beginning of this poem, I just want you to imagine that you are looking through this telescope and you've just taken the lens away from your eye and you're kind of on the top of the hill and you're sort of readjusting, sort of coming back. Telescope by Louise Glick. There is a moment after you move your eye away when you forget where you are, because you've been living, it seems, somewhere else, in the silence of the night sky. You've stopped being here in the world. You're in a different place, a place where human life has no meaning. You're not a creature in a body. You exist as the stars exist, participating in their stillness, their immensity. Then you're in the world again, at night, on the cold hill, taking the telescope apart. You realize afterward not that the image is false, but the relation is false. You see again how far away everything is from every other thing. As I mentioned in my post, the poems of Louise Glick have been an enormous part of my growth as a person and as an artist. In particular, throughout my 20s, really diving into her collections, Meadowlands, Vita Nova, The Wild Iris, and Averno. The poem Telescope is from her collection Averno. Her voice has a certain clarity and solitude to it. In fact, the voice she uses in many of her poems reminds me of this space here that I'm in right now, speaking to you from. It, in a way, reminds me of that scene in, what is it called? The Never-Ending Story. That scene, I think it's towards the end when the main boy, I think his name is Atreyu, when he is alone in a dark space with the young princess who has her hair in a bun, and it's just a totally kind of dark space where just they are highlighted and there's this intimacy to it, almost like a real meeting of minds, or like where the oracle is kind of revealed in that intimacy. And that, in a way, feels like this here, my space with my sound curtains and my microphone, and this really focused internal space where my voice is clear and I'm being methodical and thoughtful and generous in trying to speak clearly to you. that's the place that Louise Glick has always spoken to for me. I recognized her tone immediately as in kind of harmony or even perhaps a little disharmonic with my own, where there was a similar trembling that I recognized in her voice. In this poem, The Telescope, this description of her or the speaker looking through the telescope and then taking that lens away, experiencing this kind of confusion or this passageway between two different universes or portals where there is kind of a realignment that has to happen. And the way this poem describes that experience, that kind of bridge or that moving from being intimate with the stars and up close to being yet again very, very distant inside one's own body, feeling a loneliness or solitariness inside of that recognition. Again, the last line being, you see again how far away everything is from every other thing. That's always been a pretty devastating line for me, but also one that gave me a kind of beautiful poetic strength in my own sadness, in my own experience of loneliness. And that kind of clarity and remove and that description of that alteration of perspectives has always moved me and has always had some kind of elusive connection with the term scale in visual art. An incredibly complex term for me, a complex layered idea, the relativity of sizes or perspectives. So the differences in scale and size between things. I imagine just a sheet of normal white paper, 8.5 by 11, and the difference between making, say, two huge, thick, dark marks on it. Almost think kind of Franz Klein. Maybe it's a big, fat oil stick. Versus that same size paper and very gently, slowly, methodically, lovingly, perhaps with an HB or a B pencil that's really sharp, making a series of really small marks or notations where you almost have to crawl like a tiny insect across the terrain of the space that's being formed. And so the difference between those two things, that kind of physical hacking, close-up, broken branches in the brambles versus this sort of larger view zoomed out, even though it's these small intimate marks that are being made, that the scale or proximity to the maker and the viewer is actually really distant and yet requires you to lean in closer. And so a kind of opposition, a kind of eclipse where the one becomes the other. This idea of scale in my paintings is something that loops in back and forth, and it's something I'm thinking a lot about right now as I am beginning this major project here that is going to carry me all the way through May, where I am setting up 5 large panels that I'm going to be piece by piece putting together a scene of my backyard. So paying attention to and studying the different characters and the overall theatrical space of my backyard, with the fence being the kind of backdrop or curtain, creating this long, narrow space, very much like a Renaissance kind of stage, where all of my plants are kind of arranged as in a Titian allegory or a Poussin painting. And so what scale I am standing in relation to or observing those plants, in relation to how I'm notating them, in relation to how I'm depicting them on these large panels, in relation to how the viewer will experience the space I'm creating. These are all things that I'm really thinking about and are challenging and at the same time exciting, especially as I'm thinking about, you know, really breaking down separate parts so that at times I can be really close up and intimate, say with the chard plant that I painted last week, or today the study of the large rhubarb leaves that I did a painted sketch from earlier today. That those smaller, intimate moments can somehow be placed within a larger stage setting that encompasses them all, that creates the theatrical space in which they can respond to each other, which is, of course, what the garden is. It is a harmonic call and response between form and color, and that connection for me, the garden as a metaphor for painting this very specific plot of land or the rectangle of the canvas where you as the gardener, as the painter, commit to harvesting and cultivating relationships that can continue to change, can continue to grow. I want to share with you a revelation that happened to me in the gardens 2 years ago. I was at Bloedel Gardens and I was in this same green room, the reflecting pond. And I was working on a painting of the geometry of the pond itself, up to the box yew hedge, up to the emerald curtains of the cedars. And as I was working, starting the painting with rich colors, I started to cover up those colors with a series of more neutral relationships for my palette. And as though I were simply witnessing myself, like I was outside of myself watching this happen, was seeing that I was actually shifting the entire painting towards a tonal perspective of what I was seeing. Meaning, I was painting over the shapes of color with shapes of black, white, and gray that corresponded to those colors. And so this painting actually went through that transition with me of thinking, seeing in color form, and really moving it over to a tonal painting, a black and white painting. And that was a really significant move for me to witness in my own practice, and especially that it happened on the field. Because as a plein air painter, one really committed to the lifestyle of observing my life out in the world, the fact that that tonal transition happened out in nature, meaning dictated by nature as kind of raw data, was something I don't take lightly. My plein air works I really consider as primary documents. They are the true kind of maps or blueprints of my sensual perceiving mind and body. And so this tonal shift has continued to be extremely important in the entire body of work that I've been developing over the last 2 years. In a way, this kind of elastic moving back and forth between color, form, and tone is, in a way, a kind of telescope, a kind of telescope of prismatic relationships. I want you to envision the structure of the color wheel with me. To start, we're going to put all our intense, bright, kind of out-of-the-tube colors around the outer rung of this circle, starting with our primaries, fire engine red, royal blue, and lemon / dandelion yellow. Then we'll mix those together and we'll get a nice tangerine orange, a grassy green, and a beautiful rich royal purple. And so now we have our spectral hues. We've got red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and violet around that outer rung of the color wheel. If we mix all of those colors together, we know that a kind of mud happens, a kind of brownish, grayish mud. And in theory, a perfect neutral through the combination of all of these other pigments exists in the center of this color wheel. And so it's a neutral gray in the center. And again, on those outer spokes of the wheel are our saturated colors. In between are all the infinite bridges between intensity or saturation and total neutrality. In a way, you can think of these infinite colors that exist between those two extremes as little lily pads across the prismatic pond. It is these colors which are called tertiaries, tertiary meaning three, because all of these colors are made up of some fraction or proportion part of the three original primaries, red, blue, and yellow. Tertiaries, these infinite constellations of not totally neutral, not totally intense, colors that we often do not have names for, but something like burnt orange, maroon, mustard yellow, blue-gray. These are the colors that I, in particular, am very, very fond of. They are the ferry boats, the bridges between things. They are the colors that have a richness inside of them, a lineage, a connection with all of the other colors, a kind of harmonic family where red comes to the surface only a little, where green shows its face, but a little bit neutral. This back and forth between these two extremes, neutrality and saturation, and all of the wonderful liminal tertiaries between them, the colors that create a bridge or a stairway amid and among all of the colors, is something I think about and experiment with in my work. A kind of painting through the twilight hour. Not daytime and not pitch dark night, but those liminal colors that step us over the boundary between things. Last week, we talked about Georgia O'Keeffe and the, what I'm calling the and factor, the ability to live with two separate, disparate feelings at once, terror and beauty, night and day, sacred and profane, neutral and intense. This simultaneity, this relativity between things, this ability to change the scale of my marks so that I can change my relationship to my subject and thus my viewer, my listener's proximity to my voice. Last week, when I was painting the charred plant in my yard, a beautiful dappling back and forth between rich greens and the fuchsia red of the rainbow charred stalks, I then that very evening harvested those leaves and stems and chopped them up and sautéed them and ate them, and they were delicious and nourishing. And I thought so much about how that incredible plant had given me such incredible gifts. The gifts of showing me relationships and the gift of becoming part of my body, becoming part of who I am, showing me so clearly and closely and intimately how I am connected to my garden.